Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Learner's Corner. My name is Caleb Mason, and I'm so grateful that you have decided to spend a few minutes of your day here with me. And today, I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Clay Routledge to talk with him about his new book, Past Forward, How Nostalgia Can Help You Live a More Meaningful Life. And so we're going to be talking a lot about nostalgia. And as we're going to get in the conversation, nostalgia could sometimes have a little bit of a bad rap, but we're going to address that today. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, or maybe this is your first time listening to the podcast, you know that we want to create a safe place to have difficult conversations. And we believe that we can create a place to where we can engage in these types of conversations and create a place to where we can learn from anyone and from everyone, from anything and from everything, regardless of whether or not we agree with them, and on any topic as well. And today we're going to be learning about nostalgia. Now, if you are on this journey of lifelong learning, please subscribe to my Substack, to where I give different recommendations of some of the best things that I am currently learning from, as well from YouTube clips to movies and music and books or songs or just whatever is engaging my imagination and everything. And all you got to do is go to my Substack and find the link in the podcast show notes, and you can subscribe and it'll be sent to you whenever I have good stuff to recommend as well. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Routledge, and then we can jump into the conversation. Dr. Clay Routledge is a leading expert in existential psychology. His work focuses on helping people reach their full potential and build meaningful lives. Clay spent 2 decades in academia as a professor of psychology, professor of management, and distinguished professor of business. During that time, he taught undergraduate MBA and PhD courses in social and personality psychology, cultural psychology, research methods, and team leadership. He also published more than 100 academic papers, co-edited 3 books, authored 2 books, and received numerous awards for his scholarly research and student mentorship. In 2022, Clay joined Archbridge Institute as Vice President of Research and Director of the Human Flourishing Lab. And he is the author of Past Forward, How Nostalgia Can Help You Live a More Meaningful Life. And without any further wait, here is our conversation. Clay, it is good to have you on the Learner's Corner podcast today.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. And you know, just as we're beginning, we're going to talk a lot about your book, Past Forward. One of the places that I love to begin a lot of conversations with is I love hearing the origin story or the origin behind what people have done in their work. And I would just love to hear what got you initially interested in learning about nostalgia.
It's funny because really I was much more interested in future oriented thinking. And so I was curious about there's all sorts of things that humans do uniquely compared to other organisms that are based on our ability, or in large part on our ability, to imagine the future. So when I was a college professor, for instance, I could tell myself students just loved every moment of my class. They must just have been waking up every day, excited to go hear my lectures. But I suspect, at least for many of them, they were going to the class because they could imagine a future in which they were a college graduate, right? And so a lot of the things we do, we will temporarily endure discomfort or doing something difficult or privileging, a long-term goal over a present pleasure. We do that all the time when we go to the gym, right? It's most people don't think it's a great time, but we do it because we're this is going to contribute to my long-term health and fitness. So anyway, I was interested in that, and also kind of what you might say this more the darker side of that, which is the future's unknown, and so it can cause a lot of anxiety. And so I'm really interested in existential psychology, like the human quest to for meaning and enduring transcendence and significance. And some of that has to do with our ability to re reflect on the future and to be like, well, I know my time here is limited, and I don't know, I really don't know how long I have. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. I don't like cower in the corner in terror, right? I move forward with my life. And so a lot of that has to do with our ability to find enduring meaning. And so that got me thinking about like nostalgia. So if the future is, it's good to go forward towards the future with purpose, with with courage, with a certain amount of confidence, but the future is also uncertain and scary. Like maybe when we're scared about the future, like we can find like guidance from the past, we can turn to the past for comfort. Really, it was more the comfort that I was thinking about at first. Later, we discovered that, well, the past doesn't just comfort you, it's actually a source of inspiration and guidance. But that wasn't, to be totally fair, like we weren't really thinking about it that way at first. We were really thinking, okay, people think about the future, they get anxious, they look to the past, and that comforts them, and that kind of helps them move forward. So that's how I got it. Like, I really was just like, okay, like how do people deal with these like deep existential questions about being a human and thinking about like our future mortality and our uncertainty of life and all that, and like, and then what do they do? And then it's like, well, maybe they use that same mental time travel ability to look backwards in that, and that helps them in some way.
Was there a specific instance or something happened that led to the realization, or was it more of just like a progression over time as you continued to do the research?
That's a great question. Like, so I don't think it was one thing, but there is a thing that probably comes the closest to being that one thing, which when I was in graduate school, I had the opportunity to work on, there was somebody putting together a book on like the psychology of time. And he had asked my advisor, if our lab was interested in contributing a chapter on like kind of the existential component of the psychology of time. And in thinking about, oh, there must be something existential about like how humans mentally time travel, and with a real focus again on that future, we can think about the future. And so, I jumped at the opportunity and said, I would love to write that chapter. I'd love to, dig into the literature on like mental time travel and the existential implications of that. And then that mapping that out, I was like, okay, well, we think about the future and that can cause anxiety. That's when it was like started to think about, okay, well, time travel goes the other direction too. We think about the past. And so it really started out as like a almost more of like a theoretical conceptual like chapter, like writing an academic chapter that no one will read. But like that led to the formation of actual testable hypotheses, right? In the lab. So that was probably the thing that really drove it. And the second thing I guess I would say is we were working a little bit with some, none of this stuff really ended up like leading to much, but we were kind of working with some marketing people or researchers in marketing. Of course, they were doing some stuff in consumer nostalgia, and so that got us thinking about, like, okay, well, how does our attachment to certain brands and products and things like that potentially like help us like find some kind of sense of enduring meaning? And so we're kind of dealing. So I guess the broader stroke is like, we were kind of thinking about these ideas of mental time travel, but we hadn't really weren't thinking specifically about nostalgia. Nostalgia just was one component of it. But then what happened is when we started going down that road, that's when we discovered, oh, like there's not a lot of research here. Like there's a lot of writing about nostalgia in the humanities. There's a lot of speculation about nostalgia, in kind of scholarly corners. But in terms of actual like behavioral science, in terms of researchers who are like doing, randomized like trials, doing experiment like laboratory experiments, there really wasn't much there, which we found pretty shocking. Like, nostalgia seems like it's a big component of the human experience. I can't believe like psychologists aren't like running experiments on when people are engaged in nostalgia. What are sort of the downstream psychological effects of that? And so that's where I'm like, okay, there's something here like to learn, and that got us excited about doing this work. We were doing this work when I was in grad school, which was at the University of Missouri, but there was also, like, coincidentally, a team in England at the University of Southampton. They were also starting from a different perspective. They weren't doing the existential future focus stuff, but they were starting to kind of build a research program about the psychology of nostalgia. And we discovered each other, and then we joined forces. Which I ended up actually, after I finished graduate school, ended up moving to England for 2 years and working with them in this research center. So that's how it all began, is like seeing an opportunity. Oh, there's not a lot there. But really, it's kind of just one like feature of like a broader interest in like what it means to be like an intelligent organism capable of like mental time travel, of imagination, of moving forward and backwards, and symbolic thinking, and all these sorts of complex co cognitive capacities that make our lives so interesting, and sometimes anxiety
Yeah.
provoking.
I'd be curious to hear any thoughts on why nostalgia hasn't been researched or explored very much.
That's actually a really good question, because there are other threads of relevant research in different disciplines. Like, so for instance, there are people in more like clinical and counseling areas that do work in reminiscence-based therapies. But really, that's not about understanding like the machinery of how reminiscence works in the brain. It's more about like a very, very practical, like applied sort of thinking, like, oh, it turns out like if you put people in groups and have them reminiscence-based therapies, which is often group-based, and you have them like share memories and talk about their autobiographical like narratives, that seems to have some clinical benefits. And so there are people kind of doing that, but again, not really looking like, well, what about that experience specifically is having this effect? It was just more very, very practical and applied. Like I said, there were people marketing research that were doing, what you might call like more correlation-based research on nostalgia, which was really about like finding out like, is it the case that there is such a thing as like a nostalgia bias in consumption and consumer consumption? And yeah, it turns out like people tend to like the products and aesthetics and cultural like preferences of the time of their late adolescence, early adulthood. There's even a term for this, the reminiscence bump. Like, there's something about that time that like, so when they did this research, for instance, which maybe things have have changed now, but when they did this research in like the 1980s, like, for dudes, it was cars. Like, it was like you could give men like cars from different decades. Which of these cars is like the most awesome? And they pick the ones from their youth, right? They did the same thing with like music, and so that happened. That was going on in marketing, but again, they weren't really looking at, well, why? What's the psychology behind this? They were just documenting a trend. Which is good for like if you're designing a product that you want to sell to a particular generation, is to be like, well, this is what their aesthetic biases are. So there were those kinds of threads happening. And then there's a whole line of research on homesickness, which really started, which early, very, very early, like in 1688, when the term nostalgia was first coined, it was very much thought of as just homesickness. But at some point in the mid 20th century, homesickness started to take on its own, like very, very distinct, like it became a very distinct concept of like an anxiety or like, kind of dissatisfaction associated specifically with a longing for place, like for home. Whereas nostalgia became more of this broader, like you can miss all sorts of things from the past. And it's not just like negative. Like a lot of times it's like bittersweet, or positive, right? You have these positive feelings, this yearning for the past. So nostalgia became this more like emotionally complex thing that again was large, like people in the arts, I think, were very, in the humanities were kind of interested in this, but like behavioral scientists really weren't. Like, so that's not an answer to your question. It's just to say that there were ideas like around this, and there was some research in like personality psychology on like Are people more like backwards looking or more forward looking? There's that kind of stuff going on, but not like a very, very explicit like program of research focused on like understanding how nostalgia is experienced, what causes it, and what are the effects of it.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and you write about this in your book, is that sometimes nostalgia can have a bad rap whenever it just comes to the topic. And I'd love to maybe explore a little bit of kind of what is the bad rap that nostalgia gets, and then what is maybe parts of that that are earned or like, okay, I can see that point, and then parts of it that just aren't earned or we don't understand.
So I think where the bad rap comes from, I think there's a lot of things, but the main thing is correlation is not causation. You've probably heard this term before, this or this phrase before. So I think what happens is nostalgia and dissatisfaction or other negative emotions are often paired together. They go together. And so what happens is people think, well, maybe your nostalgia is causing you to be dissatisfied with the present, right? You're looking backwards and you're like, oh, back in the day. And then that's making you not appreciate life today. So I think that's often what that's where that confusion comes from. And I think that's maybe where even the historic confusion comes from. Like if we don't have time machines, so we can't go back and know like when the term was first coined as a disease, as a mental disease, which is what it was. Maybe it was like they were looking at people that were miserable, that had all these like psychological symptoms, and that were thinking longing for home. And maybe it wasn't their longing for home that was causing the symptoms. Maybe the symptoms were causing them to long for home. So I think that so what we've discovered, this is what's nice about doing experiments. So what we've discovered is if you induce nostalgia, like if you have people spend a few minutes thinking about nostalgic memory, listening to nostalgic music, watching a nostalgic video, and then measure mood, their positive mood goes up, their negative mood doesn't. That's one example, right? Their sense of feeling loved and connected, belonging goes up, loneliness doesn't. And so, okay, that's one piece. Well, second, then, if you induce positive and negative moods, we find that having people watch a sad video makes them nostalgic, but having them watch a happy video doesn't really increase nostalgia. So through that process, we can say, well, the causal order isn't that negative emotions make you more nostalgic. It's that, or sorry, it isn't that nostalgia makes you have more negative emotions. It's that negative emotions make you more nostalgic. So that when they pair, they do pair, but it's the dissatisfaction that precedes the nostalgia. And so where it's kind of earned is what I think happens is they'll bring up politics and stuff like that, and they'll say like, well, there's a whole bunch of like kind of ideological movements around like looking to the past. Now, first of all, I don't think that that's totally accurate. I don't think most people want to go back to the past. I think what people are saying, if you look beyond the superficial, is that there are things about the past that would be helpful for building a better life today and tomorrow. So they're not saying, yeah, I don't want modern medicine. They're saying, before cell phones, we spent more time with each other. You know what I mean? So they're not, it's, I think it's more surgical than people think. And so a lot of times it's just branded as, oh, like people, they just want to go backwards. But anyway, with that aside, where it kind of is earned, I think, is it is true that public figures and politicians sometimes use nostalgia in a manipulative way, but if you look at what they're doing, they're actually doing kind of what I just described in the research. They're not saying, oh, look how great the past was, you should be miserable today. They're saying, you are dissatisfied today, so look at how good the past was. And so it starts with by making people, the manipulation of nostalgia starts by with making people unhappy today by pointing out all the things wrong with society today. And then once you get them kind of worked up, then you can say, well, back in the day. So I think that I don't think that's healthy. But I think that that's a w that's how it kind of works. But taking out like that kind of manipulation, I think there are a lot of things that people are like dissatisfied. And that's part of the human condition, is we're never totally satisfied. We're always like want things to be better. If you're a person that's like prone to tinkering, you understand this. It's like, no, it's not quite. You want little improvements, right? You always want little improvements. I just think that's how things work. And so what happens with nostalgia is a lot of times, we'll be dissatisfied with something in life today. And it's not like we're just saying the past was better. We're saying, well, I've collected all these experiences over time. Some of them are good, some of them weren't. The ones that were good might be useful, like figuring out like how to be more satisfied today. And so a lot of times I do think it, and we can get into like the social nature of nostalgia, but a lot of times it really is that. It isn't people saying like, oh, I would like a crappier computer. They're saying, I liked it when we used to just hang out when we could just like drop by someone's house and like hang out. And like, I'm Gen X, so like my nostalgia is, I remember the time before everything was so like highly regulated. Not mean regulated by the government, maybe that too, but I mean like our lives were so like scheduled. And everything, like you don't really just drop, or most people don't really just drop by people's houses. We don't just have these kind of organic social interactions. Everything is very regulated through technological tools. Some of them are great. Like I really like that I can get on my phone and use Google Maps. But that also means I'm not like just stopping by and talking to someone about, hey, where should I go? You have any recommendations for a restaurant? Like I crowdsource that on the internet. And again, that's great, but I think that's what you're seeing is a lot of times people are like, well, we used to do this, and they're not saying that to make them feel worse today. They're saying like, there's something I would like to improve, and then they look backwards for ideas.
Go ahead and talk about the social component of nostalgia that you were alluding to.
So most nostalgic memories are about people. And even what seems like on the surface consumer nostalgia, like nostalgia for like 1980s video games as an example. Even that, like if you look into these hobbies a little bit, you'll find that really you don't have to go very far to find like, it's about relationships. It's like you remember going to the arcade with friends. You remember playing Nintendo with your brother. You remember listening to that album with you over at your buddy's house. And so a lot of like what seem like on the surface materialistic or consumeristic nostalgia like preferences really are just the material objects are symbols for the relationships that they involve that involved those objects. Nearly all, not all, but nearly all nostalgic memories are about relationships. And relationships like are a big source of meaning in life, family, friends. And so like it makes sense that if you think about nostalgia as involving meaningful memories, like most of our memories that we're going to find personally meaningful are going to involve the people that we care, that we care about. And so that's another way of thinking about like this, like the criticisms of nostalgias. Yeah, there is, I guess you could say there's such a thing as political nostalgia. There's, these things that people get more worried about in terms of like politics, but that's not what characterizes like most people's nostalgia. Most people's nostalgia is more about like other people that have made their life better. Even at the historic, like what's interesting is like even at the historical level, so people are nostalgic for like architecture from decades ago, or you can be nostalgic for time before you were alive. I mean, people are fascinated with old cinema or something like that. Again, if you dig a little bit deeper, there's often a story there. Like people remember their dad working on muscle cars, and so they have this they're interested in that, even though that was before their time. People I've talked to women who like have antique dish collections, and it's just like, well, they remember their grandma having this, and they were passed down, or there was some sort of influence. So even a lot of our like more aesthetic preferences that might be like date back, off not always, but often have like, well, there's a connection in there somehow that makes us feel like a little bit closer to a person, or reminds us of people, reminds us of relationships. So really, a good bulk of nostalgia. Now, certainly you can have personal, very like personal accomplishments that you like can make you nostalgic. But more often than not, it's about like time spent with people.
What's another aspect of nostalgia that that maybe we don't tend to think about?
I think one aspect that people don't tend to think about is nostalgia is considered like this bittersweet emotion, and for a good reason. Like nostalgia isn't always like purely positive. Now, again, if you think about the consumer side of things, we often associate with just fun. Like, oh, people like to watch old TV shows or listen to old music, and it's fun. But a lot of nostalgia has this component of like your longing or loss or something, like it's gone. Like it's not part of your like daily habitual life. That's why you're nostalgic for it. You don't have to be nostalgic for something you do every day. And so there's this kind of like sadness component of it, or like loss component of it. But that's also sort of what reveals like the meaningfulness of this is why holidays are, we have so much nostalgia for holidays. They don't happen every day. So we look, so there's a future-oriented component to that too, which is we anticipate, like we plan for next Christmas. And it's because we're, it's meaningful to us because of previous, because of these traditions we have year after year. And so I think when people think of nostalgia, like a lot of times they just think about oh, it's like, oh, there's something retro and it's fun. And so that's pure like positive emotion. But a lot of times it is this more like complex emotional, like loss, sadness, tinged, but also like meaning, gratitude. And the other thing I think that people don't necessarily get, though, it's funny. It's like they don't get intuitively, but it doesn't take long to convince people that nostalgia actually is very future oriented. Like if I just say, hey, nostalgia is future oriented, like the people's gut response is, well, no, that doesn't make any sense. It's about looking backwards. But then you say, yeah, but why are you looking backwards? Well, you're looking backwards because you're trying to figure out how to move forward, right? The book's title, Past Forward, right? And so the idea is like we look to nostalgia often when we need guidance, when we're trying to figure out, well, what do I want to do next with my life? Like, what do I want to prioritize? What direction do I want to take? So it does have a nostalgia does have kind of like a comforting effect, as I mentioned. But in addition to that, what we've discovered, and again, like I said, this wasn't our initially, we did not, I did not hypothesize that nostalgia would like make people more future focused. But it turns out that, after doing this for over 20 years now, what we found is after people are engaged in some kind of nostalgic reflection, they actually feel more hopeful and more optimistic about the future. They feel inspired. They want to, it's not just like them being in their own head. They actually want to share it. Like nostalgia is contagious. Like you want to share it with other people. This is why so many hobbyists like things that like cultural trends that like, people get excited when a movie comes out, like a Star Wars movie comes out, or look at the Barbie movie, or like these things that connect to people's like memories of their youth and childhood. They don't want to just experience them by themselves. They want to be part of some kind of like broader like experience where they share that passion with others. And so nostalgia doesn't just push people forward, it also pushes them out there, which I don't think people would intuitively think. Because it seems very like inward looking, like, oh, I'm sitting here waxing nostalgic. Well, really what you're doing is you're connecting with the past in a way that's like pushes you towards other people. So again, the social nature of nostalgia isn't this nostalgia makes you feel connected. It really makes people want to connect. It's a very like social mobilizing like force.
It brings to my mind. I don't know if you have seen the first Dune movie
Oh
or plan on watching it,
yeah,
but
it's
at least
awesome.
right now, Dune 2 is about to release,
Yeah.
and I've just been seeing all of the reviews, and they're saying, hey, it's one of the best movies. And what you're talking about, it makes me think of like it's almost like this excitement around like, almost future nostalgia, because everybody's saying, you know, it's great. It reminds me of The Empire Strikes Back. It reminds me of the level of the Lord of the Rings movies. And just what you were saying, it made me think of like, we're so excited to have more nostalgic things to look back on.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, there's this idea of anticipatory nostalgia. It's almost like nostalgia, and you could almost think about like investing. It's like where am I going to focus my attention? Well, we know nostalgia like is it's meaningful, like we like it. And so it's like, oh, if there is an opportunity to for more of that, like we're drawn to it. I think you're absolutely right. And sometimes like the buildup is, I mean, I don't know about you. I'm curious what you're, I don't know if you're a big like movie fan, but like I love sci-fi movies and movies in general, but I really like sci-fi movies. And trailers get like, I have to like control myself because sometimes they don't deliver. The movie doesn't deliver sometimes, but you get so pumped up about the trailer. And I think that's part of it. It's like you're saying, and then there's this hype around it and you start seeing, and this is a funny way in which, advances in technology connect to nostalgia is like a lot. Like I get this question a lot. It's like, oh, are we more nostalgic now than we used to be? And it's hard to know. There's reasons to think that we are, like in the sense of like culture's changing, but like society's moving faster, like technology's moving faster, and in disruptive periods, like we need more like stabilization and like more guidance. So you could say from the perspective in times of societal change, technological change, people become more nostalgic, and I think there's some evidence for that. But also, the internet's just a great way to share and communicate nostalgia. Like for what you're just talking about, like we can get on YouTube and watch the trailer. We can, we can crowdsource reviews and talk to, I mean, so in a lot of ways, we can create forums. The internet's a is kind of a great tool, so it's funny, like futuristic innovative technology often gives us more pathways to experiencing nostalgia, like watching, like thanks to streaming services, you can access old movies that like in the past, when I was growing up, like my experience was riding my bicycle to the little video store that was like a probably like a mile or two away and like seeing what they had on offer on VHS. Whereas like now there's just so many opportunities to access old content and to enhance, like I've been trying to like build a 4K Blu-ray collection of like some of my favorites or whatever. And I just love seeing like these, seeing these movies get a nice polish, you know what I mean? So yeah, no, but I'm super stoked about Dune Part Two.
I was gonna say that the other thing that it made me another type of, especially like YouTube videos, is like reaction videos that it made me think about, of like people seeing things for the first time. And like, I know that's one of my favorite things, because it brings up those set that sense of emotions. Like the one that's just come into my mind is like I remember like going back for like event like for the Avengers movies, for Avengers Endgame, when Cap takes Thor's hammer, and just going back and watching all the YouTube clips, or of all the heroes arriving, and the hero, and just feeding off of that energy that you see in the theater.
No, it's, I mean, that is one of the cooler, so again, like to hammer home the point about like, the people thinking nostalgia is bad. It's like, that's a good example of people aren't, when people say they're nostalgic for a time before like social media or smartphones or whatever, they're not actually saying they want to get rid of their smartphones. They're not saying they don't want YouTube. What they're saying is they wish that they could spend less time being strict, getting angry at politics on social media and more time just hanging out with people. So I think what really nostalgia in the technology space allows us to do is to improve, to make our products better, to make our experiences better, like to help people regulate themselves better. And there is some research on this that, like people who spend a lot of time on social media, they feel like less of a sense of control, and that makes them feel more nostalgic, and nostalgia helps restore a sense of control, and so they can feel like they can use it better. So I think that's a good example of like, yeah, there's all these awesome things that you're talking about, like that make the that make the internet great for nostalgia. And so when people express a nostalgia, like they're not saying they want to get rid of those things. They're saying they would like to live more intentionally. And they're looking for the to the past for even young people. We did a survey looking at like nostalgia, like how people think about technology across different generations. And even Gen Z, even the youngest adults that grew up as digital natives, actually express like a nostalgia for a time before everyone was so plugged in. And but in that same survey, they also expressed a lot of optimism about learning how to use generative AI and advances in robotics and things like that. So it's not like one or the other. It's not the case that people are just like, oh, I want to like, go back to the olden days. And throw away my technology. They're saying they're like they moving forward, they feel like nostalgia can help us improve our relationship with technology.
I don't know if this is I don't know if this is a good question, but I can't think of another way to ask it. When we experience nostalgia, what is like a healthy response to that feeling or that experience of nostalgia?
I think when we experience it, I think a good thing to do is to try to channel that into to use it in a way that's informational. So what I mean by that is like, so I listen to old 90s music on my Spotify when I'm working out, and I think there's, I think there's something to like, it makes me feel like it energizes me. And I want extra energy, but I want to get pumped up when I'm working out, right? And so we have a nostalgia playlist for that, often. And so I think a healthy response is to not just experience nostalgia passively, but figure out like what, like be kind of mindful of, okay, when we feel nostalgic, like what for? Like, what's the reason we feel nostalgic, and how can we use it? So just sort of leaning into like the experience. And how it can help us, like so, like creativity. Like it's funny because another like I'm gonna just call it a myth. I'm just gonna use strong language here. Another myth about nostalgia is it's again it's anti-creative. It makes people less creative. Go talk to any. Go find the most creative people you think you can. Whether they're artists or filmmakers or writers or engineers or entrepreneurs. And ask them about their inspiration for what the product the projects they're working on, and you'll find it's nostalgic memories. They'll talk about that first experience in the theater when they saw that movie, and who, every young filmmaker talks about the filmmakers that inspired them. Every young writer talks about the writers that inspired them. Every entrepreneur talks about like the business startups and that inspired them. I mean, so it's so you can use that kind of intentionally, I think. Like you can say, okay, like why am I nostalgic about these things, and how can that help me? And I'm not trying to say you should take the fun at like sometimes nostalgia is just fun. I'm not trying to say like you need to like get scholarly about your nostalgic experience, but if you really want to extract the most out of it, I think that when you're looking for creativity or when you're looking for motivation or when you're looking for like ideas, like to guide you, like. And you feel nostalgic, be like, okay, what's in that mem what is in those memories that what are the clues that could help me going forward?
Well, I got a couple other things I want to ask you about from the book, but before that, is there anything that we haven't covered or talked about that you want to make sure that we talk about?
I mean, I think the only thing we've kind of covered this a little bit, but like, one thing to emphasize, I guess, is that when people engage in nostalgic reflection, the psychological effect, the net effect is positive, even though there's this bittersweet element of it. Like it, when people actually like share nostalgic memory, they will talk about, oh, I miss this person, right? I don't have this anymore. And so there is this tinge of sadness. But then when you measure how like subsequently how they actually feel after that, like they feel better. Like they get a, even if it's a somewhat difficult like memory or somewhat difficult experience, like it increases not just their mood, but it actually increases their gratitude. And you'll hear people, you'll hear what we've collected all sorts of narratives from like widows that talk about nostalgic memories with a lost spouse. And there's a lot of sadness in there, but typically what follows that is they say like reflecting on these memories, like it makes me grateful for, like, I had that relationship with them. And, in a lot of ways, that has made me who I am today. And I wouldn't change that. Loss is part of life. And so I think that it's just good to remember, even though there's, like, difficult challenges, nostalgia really is, triumphant in a lot of ways. It follows, like, this redemptive arc of, like, yeah, life isn't perfect, and anything that you love, you have the potential to lose. And whether that's a person or a place or a time of your life or whatever, but, like, that also, like, is, like, helps you not just, like, make you feel, like, grateful for the life you've had, but also, like, helps you feel like, well, no, that helped make me who I am, and I'm, like, growing, like, I'm becoming a better person. And so I think that's really worth, like, emphasizing, like, the personal growth component of nostalgia too.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's great because that ties into something that I wanted to ask you about. Because you have or there's this quote in the book, and you write, "The more people view their past self as connected, the more mentally and physically healthy they tend to be." And so I kind of wanted to follow up on that and kind of going into what you were saying of like, how can we like almost like how can we experience greater nostalgia? Because sometimes whenever we look into the past, it doesn't feel nostalgic. It doesn't feel like a good experience. It feels like a painful experience. And so I would just be curious to hear anything from the research that panned out of like, okay, how do we take those memories or that those experiences and I guess connecting our past to our present in that healthy way that you were writing about.
No, that's a good question. So, psychologists, talk about this concept called self continuity, and the idea is, like, we do want to have some stable sense of self across time. We don't want to just feel like day to day we're, like, different people. I mean, that would feel chaos, like, chaotic, right? Like, today I'm this person, today I'm extroverted, tomorrow I'm introverted, then, what I mean? So it's like we do like this, like, sense of stability, and at the same time though, we don't want to feel like we never change. We want to grow. And so what people want is what's, like, a positive self-continuity. Like, they want to feel like they are growing over time through experience, but the core sense of who they are remains stable. Where nostalgia can be really helpful with that, and is nostalgia isn't like a tape recorder. It's not like, oh, here's all, here's an exact memory of how it played. Like, oh, like, we tend to be more, the more time has passed, the more we tend to be nostalgic for an experience. And I think part of this is we've had more time, like, to kind of make sense of that experience and integrate it into, like, this, like, self-continuous life story that we want to have. So for instance, you might, a memory I shared recently is, like, I used to, like, mow lawns with my dad, and I hated it, like, as a kid. He, like, make me do it, and I was, like, a punk kid, and I didn't want to go do a bunch of, didn't want to get up in the morning to go mow lawns. But, like, my dad, was like, this is important, learn work ethic and earn some money and do this stuff. And so I'd go mow lawns. And, at the time, I would, if a researcher would have said, Clay, like, how meaningful is this experience? I would have been like, it's not, like, it's boring. Like, I'd rather be doing, hanging out with my friends or whatever. But looking back, I'm very nostalgic for the experience, not only because, after my dad died, it was like, well, I'm thinking more and more about, like, experiences I had with him. But, like, I realize now that, like, he was trying to instill, like, work ethic. He was trying to teach me, like, how to, like, save money and be kind of independent and things like that. And so I think part of it is part of our, like, part of the way to use nostalgia is just think about nostalgia. It's not that it's, like, the how that memory, how that experience felt at the time. But, like, how it helps us figure out, like, who we are today and our, like, and life lessons and the connections. And again, remember I said nostalgia is very social, the connections to the people who made that for us. And so when we were doing this research early on, when I first moved to the UK, we were actually collecting, like, memories from older British adults who were children during World War II when Nazi Germany was bombing, Southern England, like, really badly. And people, these older adults who were collecting memories from, they had nostalgic memories for that time. Like, it was not a good time. Their fathers were on, the continent, fighting the war. There's a lot of separation from family, a lot of like uncertainty. But the reason these older adults had some of these nostalgic memories is that said, yeah, it was a very, very difficult time, but it was a very formative time. It helped make me like a resilient person. It reminded me that, like, yeah, you can get upset about lots of little things, but really what's important in life is your family. And so you'd see these, they felt like it really helped formed a character in them, even though, and they certainly don't want to repeat that. That's the other thing. Like, nostalgia isn't like just like playing back the tape of like, oh, I would like to relive that. In fact, if a lot of times people will say, well, I wouldn't want to go through high school again, but here's some of the memories I have that like were important. So that's to say, I think that there's a lot of content from our past that it's like how we approach it, as opposed to like the actual content at the time, but like how we look at it and learn from it in the present. So it's, our nostalgia is sort of a, it's an ongoing relationship with our past. And what's interesting, another way I think about it is like when you watch, have you ever watched a movie where like you watched it as a kid and maybe you liked it even, but like it was kind of above your, like you didn't get all of that, all the things. And then you go back and watch it and you're like, oh, I remember, like, I haven't watched a Pixar movie in a long time, but when our kids were young, like we'd watch all those Pixar movies and I just like Toy Story and Incredibles and stuff like that. And I just remember like thinking, like, oh, these movies are great because they have messages for adults and for kids. They're fun for kids, but like they're not boring for adults. But it's like that. Like you look back in your own life and you're like, oh, I didn't understand this at the time. But the reason I'm nostalgic for it now is because it was actually like pretty meaningful. It just was above my head at the time. So I think that's another way to think about it, is there's a lot of life experiences that like help us in a lot of ways, but like we just weren't at, different points in time, we're more ready for those lessons.
Well, the last thing that I want to ask you about is tied to some research that you mentioned that you did around human motivation in the book. And you talk about this concept of defense, or if we are defense oriented or growth oriented. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, so like if you want to get really nerdy about this, like there's a whole like kind of brain model of like approach versus avoidance motivation, but you can kind of think about it as like as an organism. Like it's not, we do want to protect ourselves from threats, but if we just did that all the time, if we were just vigilant against threats all the time, like we wouldn't like make it very very far. We have to go out and explore, we have to experiment, we have to innovate, we have to form relationships. And so like successfully living is this balance between like protecting ourselves from threat, like having security, but also expansion, like growing and going out in the world and like making it so like we can improve our lives. And the two can, you can think about them as interconnected, because sometimes like doing the growth stuff ultimately helps us have a good defense. Like we're going to have a better security if we're able to, advance like technology, for instance. But at the motivational level, like if we spend all of our, if we tend to be more, if we feel threatened, that's when we tend to be, or we feel insecure in some way, that's when we tend to, our brain just says, okay, now's not the time to try new things. Now's not the time to go out in the world and explore, or be curious. Now's the time to like become really more dogmatic in your thinking, be really protective, be very vigilant against threats, who you trust. And again, there might be times in our life where like that's a good idea, because we are under threat. We do need to like lock the door and like be vigilant. But like we also need to be creative and curious. And so what nostalgia, and oh, and I should also say, like, these things happen at the individual level, but like I think one of the challenges we face in society right now is there's a lot of cultural messages encouraging, whether it's like kind of outrage clickbait media, or just like the sort of like there's sort of kind of a like a growing, I guess I would say kind of like a victimhood sort of mindset of like everyone's weak and fragile and needs protected. Like the more our society moves towards like orienting people towards thinking about threats, the more it's gonna push them away from like the open-minded, creative, like explorative, like entrepreneurial activities that like advance civilization. So this can happen at the individual level and it can happen at the society level. What nostalgia tends to do is it helps us, like when we do feel this like threat, again, focusing on the social domain, because nostalgia is heavily social. If we feel rejected or lonely or excluded, you move to a new city and you don't know anyone and you're sort of insecure and you're like, don't want to put yourself out there. You feel kind of defensive. Like reflecting on nostalgic memories of past social successes gives you more social confidence. You're like, oh yeah, I am in a new city. I don't know anyone, but I've made friends before. So I can probably reflecting on those memories actually pushes people out. And it's like, oh, I can do that again. And it gives you the confidence to meet people. And so nostalgia has this like regulatory, self-regulatory, what we refer to as a self-regulatory function of when you're pushed towards defensiveness, when you feel threatened or whatever, you feel uncertain about the future, nostalgia like helps stabilize you. And that actually pushes you towards like a more like growth-oriented mindset, which is again evidence that I think nostalgia is about is more future oriented, because it puts you back on the path towards saying, okay, yeah, like I felt anxious. Nostalgia just kind of helped stabilize me, and it's kind of inspired me to go forward, to create, to innovate. And so we are, as humans, we are, again, like I said, defense and growth are both important, and managing them is like, if you were too curious, you might get yourself like killed, right? Like somebody had to try the poison, like the poison, the poison fruit to figure out, like in the, when they were foraging that, oh, maybe we shouldn't eat that. But you need a balance of both, right? And I think nostalgia can really help, like us, especially in times, like I said, in which we're maybe overly security focused because our culture is telling us like we should be like afraid all the time. And that's a barrier to like individual flourishing, but also to like societal flourishing. Like if you want to live in a free society, like you kind of have to be growth motivated. Like you can't just be defense motivated. If you like freedom involves like going out and trying things and experimenting and starting businesses, meeting people, and exploring new ideas. And so I think in our like kind of defense folk, where it just seemed to be sort of in a defense focused like culture right now, security focused culture, maybe nostalgia could help like remind us of. You do actually see this at the very, very individual level, where people will talk about how when I was a kid, I could just ride my bike and go out and do lots of things. And now there's a lot of concern about like helicopter parenting and things like that. Very security focused parenting, like a fear about like your kid might get hurt. I'm friends with people like Lenore Skenazy, Free Range Kids, and I think there's an interesting connection point there with nostalgia, which is a lot of people are saying, or a lot of people are looking to the past and saying, oh, maybe there is something to like, we have made advances that we like. We generally like that our kids are safer in car seats, for instance. But also maybe we're getting overboard, and it's okay for our kids to, walk to school that's like 3 blocks away. And so that kind of nostalgia, I think, can help improve like maybe these kind of cultural trends towards, away from defensiveness and towards a more open, like growth-oriented, like culture.
I got one other thing I want to ask you about. And I may not have written it right or written it down right, but I think you had mentioned that you're also just interested in learning about the broader picture in terms of intelligent organisms, correct? Okay. I would just love to hear, in terms of what you're researching or learning right now, what has been fascinating to you? Just one thing that's been fascinating to you in your research around that you've learned recently.
Could you be sorry, like I misunderstand the question a little bit about like.
I guess you mentioned that you're interested in just learning about intelligent organisms. And so I'm just curious to hear what's something that you've learned about that recently, which has been fascinating to you.
So what I guess what my focus of maybe is a little bit different than what you're thinking.
I was gonna say, I'm not even bringing like any presuppositions. You just got me very curious of like, okay, that's something you're interested in learning about. And so I'm just like, huh, well, I wonder what you're learning about that.
Well, what I'm thinking about is like what it really means to be like human and to, like as a like our advanced intellectual capacities. And really, you know, like the when I start talking about like the mental time travel thing is as part of it. And so I'm interested in how like the you know how humans create and how we innovate and really like a you know what I call like a psychology of progress. It's like what advance you know what advances civilization and every idea that has improved the world, whether it's a cure to a disease or like the new technology, comes from a human mind, right? And at least currently, you know, with artificial intelligence, that might change, but artificial intelligence comes from humans. And so, you know, what I'm really interested in is like unlocking, you know, how do we understand and better unlock like the human potential? Like in the existential tradition of writers like Viktor Frankl, I mean, I think one of the things that's fascinating about humans is like you can talk about all the ways in which life is sort of not in our control. You can say you don't pick who your parents are or what country you're born in or your genetic makeup. And yet inside of us, like there's this great capacity, what I would refer to like psychological freedom, this great capacity to change the direction of our life. Like if you're a person who like for instance learns that you have a genetic disposition towards addiction or something like that, one crowd will tell you, well, that's just proof that humans don't have, you know, that humans don't have a lot of control over their lives, that so many things are outside of our control. In my mind, what that means is actually you've just learned something, a vulnerability about yourself that now can help you make the types of choices to avoid certain temptations. And so really what I'm interested in about these human advances is like there are things that we can do that you know we can like control our debt. You know, it's not like we have control over everything, but we have more power over our destiny than any other organism that we're aware of. And that gives us a considerable amount of psychological freedom, like an ability. And you know, Viktor Frankl wrote about even in the concentration camps, which he was in, where people seemingly had no freedom. People had had the ultimate choice to still be, you know, to what was in their head. People could not control their thoughts. And so I'm really interested in that. And of course, how that intersects with, you know, a lot of things going on around like artificial intelligence, you know, how humans, that kind of futuristic thinking about one of the things people are worried about, of course, is the potential for like a real surveillance state, like being monitored all the time and like algorithms manipulating people. There is this constant, you know, tension between like that sort of worrying about like how much external control manipulation is in our life versus like our own ability to express ourselves, to be who you know, to sort of like have the freedom to make our own decisions. And so I just think that that freedom is like currently is underplayed a lot. We just assume like, oh, we're being controlled by social media, for instance. It's like, well, no, social media might be having a, you know, like a negative effect on your life or well-being in some way, but ultimately you have the power to change that. Connecting it back to nostalgia, I think that that's one of the things that nostalgia can help people do is like really enable their empower their like psychological freedom to be like, okay, I have all these different memories now. I can look at them and see like which ones I really think would be the most useful. But that's kind of really I'm really interested in like these like advanced human cognitive capacities that seem to be unique to our species. Now I know that people are into UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. So maybe it's not unique, but as far as we know, I have a dog and I can tell you that he's awesome, but she doesn't. do the things that people do. And so I think that that's especially if we're interested in like, improving the world, it's like really improvements. If you want to say improvements come from economic policies or social policies or like these things, it's like, well, those ideas come from people. And so the real root of human advancement is the human mind. And that's, I guess, what I'm interested in as a psychologist.
Yeah. Well, Clay, I know that people are going to want to get your book passed forward and keep up with you. Where's the best place for people to go to do those things?
You can order, thanks to the internet, you can kind
Yeah.
of order it from anywhere. It's on Amazon, and it's you can get audio, Kindle. I was a reluctant switcher to digital. I wanted to read the real books, but like as I got older, vision declined. It's harder to, and I eventually like I got it. I recently, very recently, got a Kindle, and I love it. I was like, oh, I can read so much faster, and so like there's yeah, it's available on all these formats, at your favorite bookstore.
Awesome. Well, Clay, thanks so much for being on the podcast today, and just thanks for doing the work and for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Caleb. It's been a fun conversation.
So, coming out of that conversation with Clay, I think there's a couple of things that really stand out to me. One is what he was talking about, that nostalgia doesn't create problems, but problems or life circumstances create the opportunity for nostalgia. And that whenever we experience that, whenever we have that yearning to look back, just as he was saying, it's an opportunity for us to learn about ourselves. It's an opportunity to gain more information about what's going on in our lives and what we're experiencing as well. And the other thing that really stands out is anticipatory nostalgia, as he mentioned. And I think that's one thing that I've realized about myself. I love engaging in all sorts of different stories. Particularly fiction, whether that be fantasy or sci-fi or comics of just all sorts, or movies or TV shows or whatever it is. But it makes me think of the time when one day that I hopefully have kids, and thinking, and I guess the anticipatory nostalgia is thinking on those stories and the opportunity that I have to get to share with them as well, and some of the meaningful things there. So those are, a couple of the things that I'm thinking about, and just how excited that gets me. Like I and not just with, maybe my future kids and everything, but even just with other people as well. I love sharing stories and experiences with other people. And yeah, and everything. So those are a couple of things that I'm thinking about from this conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you're on this journey of lifelong learning, subscribe to my Substack as well, and you'll get all the things that I am learning from as well. And so I think that's all that I have for today. So I do want to say thank you again to Clay for being on the podcast. Thank you to Sam Massey for creating the music for this podcast. And thank you for listening all the way to the end of the episode. My name is Caleb Mason. And until next time, keep learning and keep growing.